It's not often I get to prepare for an interview as if it were a research project, but our guest wrote a really in-depth piece for The Athletic about the transfer portal. Some of it's pretty amazing. He's the Fine Sports journalist. You can follow along on Twitter. The handle is at Max_Olson. Max, much appreciate the time. How's life treating you these days?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Now that the things on the portal have finally slowed down, it's good to have my life back a little bit. I appreciate it.
You know, as a first-time guest, just some basics. I'm, sure listeners like to know where you hail from, maybe your sports loyalties growing up, and just the things that ignited your passion that would push you to seek this as a career.
Yeah, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and so when you grow up there, especially as a child of the 90s, you were raised in a place where college football is the number one thing and the only thing, and so that I would say that's a big reason why I do what I do today. I went to the University of Nebraska and then got a job with ESPN coming out of college, covering college football, and I've been doing it for more than a decade now.
Yeah, you wrote a piece about, we'll get to the portal, but, you wrote a piece about Husker football, the hiring of Matt Rhule, got fired by the Panthers. He replaced favorite son Scott Frost, who you probably know spent 7 really high-level years here. I mean, ever since the brass decided Bo Pelini winning 9 or 10 wins a year wasn't good enough, there's kind of been some slippage. So what's the buzz among Husker fans that you hear from? Are they pretty excited about Rhule taking over to, I guess, restore Husker glory?
Yeah, I think there's optimism so far about the way that Matt Rhule and his staff have attacked this job and done a lot of recruiting and have really kind of settled and done all the right things so far since taking this thing over at the end of November. But I think this is also a fan base that is a little bit beaten down by all the losing and by all the disappointment. And obviously a lot of people had very high hopes for Scott Frost as kind of one of those, can't miss hires. And it just really went badly in every way in his time in Lincoln. And they just, haven't been to a bowl game in a very long time. The Power Five program that has waited the longest to go back to a bowl game is now Nebraska. Now that Kansas has gone to one. So pretty crazy. That was a disappointing run. And there's some optimism here, but you're right. The expectations have definitely kind of changed and been chipped away at over time now, where I think if Nebraska gets back to a bowl game under Matt Rhule, they'd feel pretty satisfied. And it's, it's been a long time since the days of Pelini where, 8 or 9 wins wasn't quite satisfying enough.
Well, to date myself, I date back to the 71 game between Johnny Rogers and Greg Pruitt. So when you say, gosh, Nebraska's gotten the longest of the Power Five without going to a bowl game, little Steve is like, well, that's impossible. But that obviously is the case. So,
you even think of the last Nebraska bowl game off the top of your head?
Not even close. I mean, thinking back, because once they joined the Big Ten, it wasn't a Rose Bowl. It wasn't a New Year's Day Bowl. So I couldn't even imagine which one was it.
Yeah, they lost a Music City Bowl to Tennessee. It was in December of 2016. They lost to Josh Dobbs and the Vols, so a very long time ago.
It sure was. Since we're the flagship station of Oregon Duck football, about a year ago, in discussing the portal, we went through who left and who is coming. I want to know what you think about our creativity here. We decided it's not the transfer portal, it's the transfer superhighway.
The superhighway.
Yeah. So
I like it.
All right.
I like it.
I've been taking a little mini survey because sometimes we think we're a lot smarter than we are. But anyway, talking with Max Olson of the Athletic, a general thought, while name, image, and likeness is a separate topic, the portal another, is it accurate to say there's kind of a connection? Once NIL got green-lighted legally and the players had this freedom of movement for the first time ever, there was going to be a big adjustment period for all involved, even if we didn't realize it would be this big. I know NIL and portal are different, but fair to say that there's this eternal connection there.
Yeah, I think so, and I don't mean that in like a cynical way where if somebody gets a commit out of the portal, well, they must have paid for him or something like that. But I think that that's certainly a factor, whether it's group of five players trying to move up to Power Five schools where they feel like they have more opportunities to make some money, or it's, you know, certainly those top shelf recruits, those guys that were highly touted or all conference players, when they go into the portal, yeah, certainly there's some that are seeking a payday by doing so. But yeah, I think that you have to link those together, and certainly the one-time transfer rule and NIL really kind of hit at the exact same time. And so I think that it certainly factors into the decision that these players are making throughout their careers about where they want to be.
I thought an important part of your article was not necessarily about where the players land, but the more than 500 FBS players who put their name in the portal and don't have a home yet. What about their circumstance? And as you wrote, perhaps, A, they didn't make the wisest decision, and before opportunities disappear, they might be better off looking at what is still available and accepting maybe lower-level offers.
Yeah, you know, that number is down to 465 now, which is good. You hope to chip away at it every day as these guys find places to go, even if that means going to a Group of Five school or an FCS school, or, you know, maybe moving down from where they were. But, you know, in a lot of cases, those players are looking for more playing time, so it kind of makes sense for them in their next step. You know, I think it's and it's still early, you know, where obviously if you went in December, you generally are trying to be a mid-year transfer, so hopefully you found somewhere to go by the start of February. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how many of these players end up at junior colleges or end up, you know, maybe trying to go back to where they were, or like I said, having to move down. You know, I just think for every player, you have to kind of have a good understanding of your situation. And, you know, if you're someone who has put stuff on tape, then you're probably going to get recruited when you hit the portal. If you're a guy that is a freshman or sophomore and hasn't played at all, and you're hoping someone sees your practice tape or something, like, you're probably not going to get that many phone calls. And you have to be pretty, you know, work pretty hard and lean on old relationships and connections to try and find somewhere to go. So you just hope that players have a pretty realistic sense of where they are in their career. If they feel like they have to move on from a place, and you know, certainly it leads to, like, if you were a parent of someone who's going in the portal, you'd probably tell them, hey, make a few phone calls before you go in. I mean, it kind of makes sense to at least have some idea of where you could go before you make that decision.
Talking with Max Olson of The Athletic, another important point had to do with, well, this transfer period is closed. We go to May 1st for another one, and you linked something. What could you tell us about the new roster management rules and how coaches will see this, I guess, as another opportunity to kind of fix shortcomings?
Yeah, you know, I think that the way things have changed here really in the past year or two, it definitely leans in favor of the coach and the program over the player in terms of their ability to have more roster flexibility. And it makes sense. It makes sense that, you know, for the health of your team and your ability to play games, that you need to be at 85 scholarships. And obviously we've had some programs like Kansas that have fallen far behind that. And so giving coaches the ability to, you know, just constantly have an 85-man roster is important. And there's definitely value in that. But I think one of the effects of that is we're seeing coaches are kind of turning over their roster intentionally a little bit more, where it's, you know, if you're at the end of a semester here, you know, oftentimes these coaches are having exit meetings with their players or end of spring meetings with the players and kind of telling them, hey, we don't think you're going to play here. We think you should move on. And now if you do that with a player, the backup or a guy who's had injury issues or whatever, if you run players off now, you can just replace them with a transfer. I mean, you can replace every kid you lose. And so I think we are kind of seeing that this offseason a little bit more, that you are seeing backups go in the portal, and probably they were encouraged to go in the portal because they're, you know, it's a very competitive space in recruiting. And I think coaches are always kind of looking to free up more room to potentially get a little bit better.
You know, another thing I found interesting as far as landing spots, I mean, we know Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, you know, they get like 54 and 5-star guys through the traditional recruiting methods. But what have you learned about, I guess, the difference between how the powerhouse programs and those chasing them approach using the portal?
Yeah, it's different for sure. I think that, you know, generally speaking, if you look at the top of college football, and obviously there were some there were some outliers this year, like USC that took a lot of transfers and got a lot better and contended for college football playoff. Oregon too, obviously, but you know, I think a lot of those programs. I think Alabama has still only taken one transfer in this cycle, and I think Georgia has taken just two. It's for two or three. Ohio State has taken a couple. They're trying to get more, but overall, those programs that can recruit great recruiting classes, you're trying not to lean on the portal very much, and that's, you know, certainly that you look at Georgia's team that just won it all again. They didn't take any last year, so. You know, I think you see some of those programs, Texas, Texas A&M, the ones that are recruiting at a really high level, they're not trying to bring in 10 transfers every year.
You know, the last thing I want to hit on, I want to use the word exodus. And sitting here, of course, I saw Oregon was 7th, 21 departures. Some prominent coaches and schools like Jimbo Fisher at Texas. Two other Pac-12 teams, Arizona and Cal, among the top seven. Max, do you see any rhyme or reason, or is this going to be like a year-to-year issue? Or, you know, with those kind of coaches or programs that are going to lead to, I guess, more of a revolving door?
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you look at the, you know, as you pointed out, I think the schools that are have been the most aggressive in transfer recruiting this offseason generally are in year one or year two in their program, and it's partially it's about bringing in their guys, and partially because, you know, you've got the momentum, obviously, at a place like Arizona State or Colorado where, you know, kids want to come in and you want to get that thing better because, obviously, nowadays, there's not a lot of patience for losing in year one. There's just not. And so, you know, you don't have to wait for that first full recruiting cycle to get your roster better. I think everybody, you know, Lincoln Riley and Dan Lanning and others have kind of shown the way that there's a way to improve your team right away through the portal that makes you pretty competitive. And so, you know, I think we're going to see, certainly there's been a lot of Pac-12 schools where that's the case this offseason. And I'm glad you pointed out Cal. Cal's another one. I think they've done a great job of finding some good players. UCLA probably is one of the more underrated recruiters in terms of getting really good players out of the transfer portal. And, you know, when you go line up against them, a lot of their best players last year were guys that transferred in from somewhere else. And so I think you're seeing a lot of Pac-12 coaches really get – there's an advantage here by getting better players via the portal. But certainly year one, year two, you're seeing programs like Arizona State and Colorado taking 25-plus players. And, yeah, that's probably uncommon. But, you know, that's kind of the recipe now to starting things off.
Yeah, might be the reason they ended up with half the conference ranked last year for the first time since they became the Pac-12. But, folks, he's Max Olson of The Athletic. Check it out. Subscribe. Support quality journalism. The Athletic is that. On Twitter, his handle is @Max_Olson. Hey, Max, thanks a million for the time. That's some awesome insight and information. Be well. Hope you and yours have a terrific 2023, and I hope we could talk again down the road.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. Have a good one.